Social Sessions is a forum for discussing social-emotional wellness and safety issues in education. Alex, thanks for being with us today.
Excited to be here, Gary.
We're thrilled you made some time for us.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you're an expert in social media. You're working all over the country helping organizations understand the power of the medium and how it's used. Can you tell us a little bit how you got into it, a little bit about the work you're doing?
Sure. So right now I'm a social media strategist at the UVM Medical Center and at the Health Network. And as you mentioned, I have toured the country talking about social media and how it can be used by companies and then specifically within the health realm. How I got into it, my job didn't exist when I was in college. So it's kind of interesting to think back to the early 2000s. And when I was in college, I actually studied government and public affairs, and I was always really interested in communication and the tools politicians, leaders, others use to affect change, enact policies, have conversations with constituents. So that was really my area of interest. And at the same time that was happening, things were happening politically in terms of the internet. Howard Dean, worked with MoveOn.org, and that was one of the first campaigns that kind of dealt with the internet as a tool to galvanize and, get people talking. And then, of course, when Barack Obama ran for president, I think social media was a huge part of that. So I think early on in my life, I was just really interested in that. And while I was in college, that's when social media was really taking off. 2004 is when Facebook launched, and I was a junior. I think either midterms or finals week, Facebook was launched at our college, and everyone, instead of studying, was curating their profile and are you friends with me? I had people in the dorm come by to say, friend me. So that was really its infancy, and at that point, it was just used by colleges and universities. But I was really interested in it as a tool, and I think as I developed my career after college, Twitter launched soon after. I started blogging, actually. I ran my own little art blog for a while. So it's really interested in using the new tools. And then, at a certain point, I decided to work in an agency. They were really looking for somebody who specialized in new media, is what they called it at the time. And they wanted somebody who knew how to blog and knew how to talk to bloggers. So I thought, I do this. I'm interested in it. And I ended up working at a local firm in Burlington, Vermont, that specializes in marketing communications and built their social media practice. And that was really exciting because we were just figuring out how to use these tools. How do you use Facebook for a company? How do you use Twitter to talk to customers and engage in customer service? If we're gonna do a blog as a brand, what does that look like? Who writes it? So there were all these interesting questions to ask, and more so all these interesting people to connect with, because as social media became more pervasive as a tool that people use, people everywhere, so many more people to connect with who were specialists, influencers, and then I think at the end of the day, customers and audience members. What an awesome way to actually have one-on-one conversation with a customer instead of, through an ad, a traditional ad or a TV spot or stuff like that. So over my 5 years there, it was really an interesting opportunity to kind of figure out, how do we use these tools?
You were really a pioneer in many ways.
That word. I'll use that. I'll take that.
As I listen to you, it strikes me that you took something that didn't exist before. This was brand new, and you were one of the first people out there saying, wait a minute, I think there's a way to be able to use this for many different reasons in many different ways. And I think that's kind of cool. So, what is social media? I hear blogs, I hear social media, I hear websites, and I look at all of those things and they kind of interact with each other, but yet we think of them differently. But what is social media?
Sure, I think social media at its most basic is a piece of content that people are able to interact with. And people have done this throughout history, but the way that we think about social media today is internet bound and, on the web. Somebody posts a photo, a blog article, a video, and then people are immediately able to participate and to share, either comment, share it, interact with it in some way. So that's media that we socialize with, so hence social media.
So it's different than a website. So a school has a website, which is maybe one directional. They put information up and it goes out.
Sure.
So social media is a little different in that, you can interact with a website, but maybe not comment on it. Although now you can someone posts something on a website, yeah. there's often a comment tool. So it feels like some of that stuff is beginning to overlap.
Well, some of those are social media elements. And I think what you said, you made a good point. You said one way when you mentioned the website thing. And social media is really a two-way conversation stream. And that's what it should be at the end of the day. I think sometimes you see a company decide, oh, let's use social media and just put information out, not realizing the incredible potential to get information back from the people they're serving. And I think, you know, you see sites like Facebook, Twitter, blogs, et cetera, but you're also seeing social tools being integrated right. into, like what you mentioned, with a website where you can comment, you can maybe interact with something. So I think I would consider that social media too, because it allows an opportunity to have conversation. It allows an opportunity to create community. I think that's another important part about social media mm-hmm. is that it gives the ability to create community. So for a school, for example, I could imagine teachers using social media to create some kind of community among them, some community of practice. I could imagine parents, of course, it's a huge audience, and them using social to interact with the school and create some kind of community around that. So I think that's an important kind of piece of the puzzle too.
So there's been this evolution. The internet came along, and then we had these websites.
Mm-hmm. Remember websites back in the day? I do.
I do. I remember writing I wrote my first website back then. I was working at the police academy, and I built the website.
So you were pioneering.
I don't know about that. No one would ever look at that website and think I pioneered anything. But I understood that part of it. And then I've watched this evolution. So how has it evolved? I mean, I think I hear you talk about how it's evolved in terms of use, but mm-hmm. social media seems like, I remember Facebook used to be just text-based.
Yeah.
You know, it was almost like a website you could interact with in mm-hmm. the way you put it out, where it was, but now it's text, it's video, it's photos, it's, I mean, how has the medium evolved, even in the time since you were, you know, first interacting with it?
Yeah, I think the medium has evolved in kind of two ways. The first one being the technical abilities and the aesthetic abilities. So now we have the opportunity to very easily create video content, memes, photo content. These tools have all become a little bit more, I think, democratized in terms of like who's able to use them. Before, sure. if you didn't have the knowledge, technical knowledge to build a website, like you mentioned, or to build an app or a tool, you really couldn't do it. But now these companies have made this very simple to do it, I think because they want people to use it,
sure.
of course, but also I just think the technology has come far enough that it's very easy to figure out like how to shoot a short video, or how to, you know, create a graphic or a GIF or GIF. I don't know. We can talk about it later. But that's a question to get into. But
I never know what to call that.
And then I also think the user experience has changed a lot. So this used to be something that was used, you know, with Facebook, it was primarily college students. With Twitter, that I think that launched at South by Southwest. So that was used by an older audience. But we've seen audiences build.
Interesting how that may have swapped.
Yeah, I know. Because right now, no one under the age of 30, I think, or under the age of 20, wants to be on Facebook.
Yeah, my daughter, when I asked her how come she doesn't have a Facebook account, she said, that's for old people, Dad. Mm-hmm. So,
but there are a lot of old people using Facebook, so it's a very powerful
I said to her, I thought it was a great tool for the family to be connected, yeah. right? I mean, in terms of that. So it's evolved. I mean, the service
has evolved.
And it's evolved away from, like, computers. It used to be Facebook was yeah. a computer application, but now I often wonder, like, computer versus handheld phone, or
so many more people are using it on mobile, and that's like across the board in terms of demographics. It's not just like 15-year-olds, it's 55-year-olds. So
and some aren't
even
available.
The mobile device has just become like another appendage, I think, right. for human beings. So I think, and the other thing is that these social media platforms have become businesses. You know, this is something that may have started off as a college project for a founder, but has very quickly become an actual business. And when you become a business, you know, you're accountable to shareholders, boards of directors, you're accountable in terms of making money. That's why advertising is such a huge part of social media now. So they've really become much more sophisticated. And I would also say the evolution is also expanded into different options for users. So whereas you may have had a Facebook or Twitter just, you know, 10 years ago, now you have Instagram, you have Tumblr, you have Snapchat, you have all these different messaging tools.
Periscope.
Yeah, so there's such a wealth of tools out there that allows the user to really choose, well, what's right for me? What what serves my needs, and also for a company, where is my audience? What are they using? How can I use what my audience is using? So there's a lot more opportunity, and there are all these niche social networks, like there's LO, which is the one for designers. Right. There are all these different things that have cropped up. So there's a lot more options.
So you talk about this sophistication that, you know, in the beginning it was very much, you know, the tools were simpler, and then there was an evolution of the ability to have a camera and audio and video, and, you know, it became, I like the way you put that, more democratized, mm-hmm. right? It was, the masses were able to mm-hmm. use this. And then these services became businesses, is what I heard you say. And,
yeah.
you know, and they generate big dollars. I mean, Facebook and Twitter and some of these companies are billion dollar companies,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, serving billions of people.
Well, worldwide, yeah. right? And so they're businesses, they're community makers. So how do you make sense of what you do with social media? Like, if I'm a school superintendent or I'm a university president or a vice president, student affairs, or whomever, whatever demographic in a school, how do I even know what to choose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I have Facebook, I use Twitter, I could use Instagram, I could use, I don't, like, how do you know?
Yeah.
How do you make those decisions? It seems overwhelming to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what advice would you have for folks trying to figure out, what do I use and for what purpose?
Yeah, well, I think the first question to ask, well, two questions that I think are really primary to ask whenever you're developing a plan or a social media strategy, and that first is, what is your goal? What are you trying to do? And if you look at your communications goals as a school, you might see there might be some opportunity there to expand communications, to reach certain stakeholders, to reach certain communities that might be underserved. So there might be various, I would say look at your communications goals first as an organization, and then look at your audience and say, okay, if my target audience is teachers, if it's community stakeholders, if it's parents, if it's students, what are they using and how are they using it? And I think Pew Research, they do a lot of research around internet usage, mobile usage, and social media usage. They have some really great reports on how people use social media, because, you know, I think at this point, I want to say it's like in the high 70%, maybe in the 80s, the number of Americans who are using social media. So it's really pervasive. But where it's different is how people are using it. So again, like how a 14-year-old uses social media is a lot different than how you and I use it. So I think really analyzing your audience and how they use a tool would be really, and where, what they're using as well. Because you could say, oh, let's use Facebook, let's communicate with people on Facebook, and then you find out your audience isn't even there.
So the tool isn't, the platform, the social media platform, isn't the goal. This,
correct.
Well,
yeah.
I need to be on social media, yeah. So I'm going to just put something in. That's not the way to approach this. What I hear you saying is, know what you need to communicate, mm-hmm. how and when you need to communicate it, mm-hmm. and then figure out what's the best tool, i.e. which platform gets
yeah.
you that goal.
Exactly. Like, really think about, because I think it's easy to be enamored by social media tools and say, well, we need an Instagram page, or we need a Facebook group for this. And it's really easy to go to the tactic first without really being thoughtful mm-hmm. about, you know, what's going to serve the audience best. Sure. What do they need? What do they want to know? And I think that research is really important. When I was working at the marketing agency that I was at, I worked with a public utility company, and they provided like electricity and natural gas services to customers in a certain part of the U.S. And they wanted to be on social media, but they didn't know, like, where should we be? What should we do? So instead
of...
So
they knew they needed to be on it, but they didn't know more than that.
Exactly. They didn't know much more than that, and they... You know, they knew other people were using it. So there's a little bit of like, well, somebody else is using it, I need to get on. There's that fear and anxiety. So we actually pulled back and we did a research project and we said, let's see what people are saying. Let's do a social media conversation report. Let's understand what the online conversation is. And I know this is something that Social Sentinel looks at a lot, is monitoring of conversation. And that's what we decided to do. We decided to monitor what was the conversation out there, what were people saying, where were they saying it, what were the topics, who, what, where, when, why. So that we could actually determine, okay, if we're going to launch, and we decided to launch Twitter first because we found out that a lot of their customers were actually using Twitter for customer service conversations as well as other hyper-local community
conversations. No, it's like, you know, you have a bad experience on a plane flight and you
yeah.
tweet about it, they
exactly.
answer just like that, right?
And no one loves their public utility company, so.
Right.
<yeah.
laughs> I love my public utility company. I just want to, you know.
All right, go on record saying that. So, you know, we decided let's start there and let's start answering. And we decided customer service was an important issue beyond just marketing and communications around, you know, some of the key initiatives and some of the more, the bigger advertising campaigns that were going on. We wanted to actually answer people's questions. And that actually ended up being really helpful being on Twitter, because I want to say a few months after we launched, this was back in 2011 when Tropical Storm Irene hit. And we had a huge natural disaster on our hands, and we had, I want to say, 1 million people lost power. And for those people, social media is what they turn to for help. So we immediately used social media for crisis communications and to help people find resources in their community.
Yeah.
You know, some of these people lost power for 10 plus days. They couldn't take a shower. They couldn't do this. So really our goal very
was
quickly...
was scanning that content, looking for signals from your
exactly,
customers.
Exactly.
Kind of like what we do.
Yeah. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we were looking at, signals of need, of help, like where people needed help. Where, and some people actually reported, like, there's a tree down here, there's something here. So we actually were able to gather some really good information to help people. And after that, we were able to launch a text messaging program, because we found out some people, like, wanted, because they were on their mobile device.
Yeah.
We were able to develop a site where people could report incidences and issues. So the social media help was really great in terms of proving that the tool was a good one to use, but it also helped us develop a lot of other ideas. So that's what, that's similar, you said,
yeah,
signals.
So
tell
you,
me about
so
that.
You end up, so the way you've experienced social media is that the interactive nature around a topic of a community, let's say, or whatever that community is, whether you like to sing in an a cappella group,
mm-hmm.
whether you like to ride motorcycles, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
this is an evolution of that to where now organizations, you know, are using it to get feedback, direct
mm-hmm.
feedback, and understand what's happening in the moment. So,
yeah,
does it mean,
yeah.
So how has social media changed the way we communicate? I mean, I think about,
mm-hmm.
you know, we used to write letters to each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, when the time when technology was such
yeah,
a rise,
yeah.
and then phone calls, you know, and you know, I remember, in, you know, when I was growing up, it was you'd be on the phone with your friends at
mm-hmm.
night. And I don't even think my kids know we have a phone in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they
Well, did you see that video? There was a video going around on social media about some, like, teenagers who they just gave them an old school phone and they
don't want to do that.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Don't with it.
It's funny, like the
yeah.
phone will ring and no
one
answer.
It made me feel
it, right?
But
yeah, exactly. So, but how has social media changed the way we're communicating?
Yeah.
Like, what have you seen around that? You know, as it's being
mm-hmm.
used as a tool.
I think the biggest way social media has changed the way we communicate is immediacy. Because you mentioned letters, you mentioned phone calls. Those are all, I mean...
Emails at one point. We used to actually write emails to each other.
But as you like go through that evolution of letter, phone call, email, like you see like the time in between message from the other person has become nothing, right?
Right.
So on social media, I can, for good or bad, and we can dig into that, but for good or bad, I can immediately share what's on my mind, what's happening in my community, how I feel about the news, how I feel about this, how I feel about that. How I feel about something that's happened to me, I can instantly put it online, and I can instantly get feedback on it. Because we all like
instantly
kinda,
live with the consequences if it's something that.
Yeah,
you know,
well, which is the trouble with it. Sometimes is, you know, sometimes, you know, human beings can be impulsive, right? At any age, and I can impulsively feel a certain way and post something, and you know, have to deal with the ramifications of that.
Sure.
Either way, so I think that's the biggest way. I think the other piece is that it's made everyone kind of a reporter of their lives or the life that's happening around them. So it's radically changed the way we consume news, information, and content. Again, for good and bad, because I think some of the information, this is what I deal with at the medical center, there's a lot of misinformation posted online. And that's because there are so many voices who are, some sharing great content, great information, and some sharing content that hasn't been verified, or we don't know if it's real or true, or...
So there's like, so it sounds like that's a second issue with how social media has changed the way we
mm-hmm.
either communicate or connect with each other. One is immediacy
mm-hmm.
and the pros and cons of that.
Yeah.
And the other is maybe veracity, like the accuracy of information and the sources it comes from. And so how does that impact the work you do with organizations that you serve?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in both the immediacy, which I think is probably pervasive to our culture, but that accuracy information is important, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get something out in the community happening and people are talking about it and get their facts wrong, it creates all kinds of other challenges.
It creates many challenges, and that's why it's so important to the first step, I think, for any social media project is to monitor the conversation and to be watching the conversation, because you want to know immediately when something goes on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, can I verify that? How should I respond to that as a brand? Do we need to chime in here? What do we need to say? You know, in the health world, and I imagine the education space as well, you know, there can be some significant challenges if an accident happens, or I remember a few years ago when the latest Ebola outbreak happened, and we had a person who thought they had it here in Vermont. And there was a lot of conversation on social media about that, because this person posted about on social media about it first, that he was in a part of the world where he could have contracted this, and that created a lot of fear and anxiety. And like, we as a medical center and as a medical and health authority, it was important for us to get in on that conversation as soon as possible to help people understand what was going on, how they could protect themselves, et cetera, so that we didn't have a kind of a crisis.
Well, crisis communication is different now. Yeah. I mean, I'm a former police chief, and I remember as a university police chief, you know, an unfortunate, tragic, or other event would happen, and then we would have 35, 40, 50, 60 minutes to get together, make decisions about communication. Yeah. By the time I retired from the university, there was none of that. It was, you were always behind the eight ball on the communication. It was always out because of social media before you got it.
Well, that's how it's radically changed the jobs of people who work in communications. But I would say really at this point, because social media is a tool used by so many people, it's kind of changed all our lives in that respect. Like, as professionals, we have to be super nimble in terms of responding. And then the other piece of that is doing so much planning to kind of figure out, well, what if something like this happens?
Right.
And that's work that can be a little bit more long-term, but it's a lot of pre-planning to prepare for something that could happen. So
getting your messages right ahead of time,
knowing
what you're going to put out.
Anticipating. Yeah.
So if you have a crisis communicate, it kind of raises another, I guess, question about that. So, you know, you have to communicate to the world, to your community about something that's going on, and now you're trying to figure out, you know, how you put it in email is different than how you text it, is different than how you post it to Facebook or Twitter. So there's that planning of multiple strategies of communication that you can't ignore.
Exactly.
Because it, people are getting that information in many ways.
Yeah, and how do those all interact together? In many instances, you'll have different people working on different parts of that. So there's a team and a people process, you know, that's kind of part of that as well. Like, how do you make sure everyone's on the same page internally? That's why I think when you have a social media program, it's really important to identify who speaks for the organization on social media, and then how does that person bring that information to the rest of the team internally so people know what's being said and how they can, like, how would the media relations team use it? How would a CEO use that information? So making sure that there's that full circle of feedback.
I like what you say about having a goal and understanding, because as I'm listening, I'm thinking, you know, a school may want to use, I'm going to talk about a K-12 school, a school district, you know, may want to use social media to communicate the daily, you know, today's lunch in the cafeteria is this.
Yeah.
There's a PTO, parent teacher organization meeting, and they want to use it for that. But then something bad has happened and there's a crisis communication that needs to go out. And so, again, the goal is to, you know, each of these needs for communication, the tool is social media, and then how it's used depends on, you know, and I'm guessing which social media platform also is, you know, depends on what you're trying to get out and where you're trying to send that information.
Yeah, completely. I think you got that completely right. And, you know, for a school, I mean, I've seen in recent years, just as being a social media user, this isn't even in a professional sense, I've seen that when a lot of crises unfold at a school, like, you know, a shooting,
a university or K-12,
any kind of crisis, health or criminal or otherwise, I see the conversation on Facebook first. You know, I'll see parents like posting news stories or posting updates about who's safe and what's going on or what questions they have. So I think we need to acknowledge that whether you participate or not, these conversations are happening, and the opportunity is to be able to participate in that conversation to provide some value to that conversation. You know, not every social media conversation you have to be a part of. Certainly in my work at the medical center and with other companies, there are certain cases where I'm like, you know what, we don't need to participate in that. Let the users
talk.
But in certain instances,
you have to.
You have to. Because
control the message.
You have to control the message, but you also have to provide valuable information to help people out. Especially if you are a school or a higher education institution, to help people understand what's going on, so that
so many constituents, as I listen to you, I think to myself, you know, if I'm a university or a leader at a university or excuse me, a leader in a school district, I'm communicating and listening to the conversation with students, with faculty, with staff, teachers, mm-hmm. parents, neighbors, alum. It's overwhelming. You know, mm-hmm. What advice do you have? You know, what would you tell me as a school administrator about mm-hmm. how to get my head wrapped around this? It's just so, feels so daunting. Like I'm, you know, whether I have a communications team at a university or whether it's, you know, myself and the assistant superintendent or the mm-hmm. principal, what advice do you have for, you know, how I get my head wrapped around
this? You know,
I
think it's taking it piece by piece. You know, you don't have to do everything at once. You can determine, like, what is our path in terms of using social and digital tools to communicate. And you don't have to be on every single channel at the same time. You can say, okay, a core audience is here. These people are excited about it. Let's go there first and see how it does. The cool and interesting thing about social media is that it's such a great environment to test and learn and see what works, what doesn't, how does the audience use it? Because sometimes you'll launch a social media presence and what you thought might happen might actually turn into something else that has like some really interesting mm-hmm. benefits. So I guess my advice is to really take it one piece at a time and start with one place that you can manage. And then at the same time of that, realize, you know, no man is an island, as they say, so, or no woman. So see who could be on your team. And I think that's actually a really interesting process because there are certain people who might be interested in being a community manager, for instance, so somebody who responds to questions on social media, who really enjoys that conversational community building piece. There might be others who enjoy creating content, writing articles, taking photos, shooting video. And there might be others who are more interested in analyzing, like where do we see most people interacting? What time of day do they interact? So there are all these different skills that are important in a social media, in the profession and in a program that you might find at a school. You might have different people at your organization who are interested in those. So you could develop a little bit of a social media team, so to speak. And that team could meet regularly to talk about their roles, what they've done, etc. So it doesn't become something that's only owned by one person or even owned only by administration. It's something that the entire organization can become a part of, which is exciting because people in most cases, and I hope, most people are happy or proud about some aspect of their job or the organization that they work for. Mm-hmm. So the ability to share that in a social environment can be exciting for them and they can feel good about being a part of it, being an advocate for their organization on social media.
I like the way you frame that. I mean, I you know, aside from, you know, the football team has its Facebook page or the mm-hmm. whatever, you know, in whatever platform, the, you know, the chess club has its Instagram page, whatever that
is.
Yeah. I can't help but think that many school leaders, you know, when they hear social media, might get stressed, mm-hmm. right? Oh gosh, someone doesn't like something and now, you know, 700 mm-hmm. people are having the conversation, I gotta go deal with it. What I hear you saying is engage social media, recognizing that it's a tool to get feedback, mm-hmm. you know, good, bad, and different, mm-hmm. but if you control, if you set up the right strategy, it's a way for you to promote the school, mm-hmm. promote what you're doing, really share a lot of good stuff, mm-hmm. and it needs intention. You have to be intentional about how you're going to use it.
Yes.
And so I like the way you've kind of laid out that level of focus. Like mm-hmm. do it, look at it, focus, create, you know, make something positive out of
it. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned negative conversation. For me, and this might sound antithetical to anything anybody else listening or watching might think, but I would rather know what the negative conversation
is. Absolutely. Yeah, sure.
I would rather we have conversation on our Facebook page or in a group or on Twitter or anywhere else and have people with dissenting viewpoints share, as long as it's in, you know, a respectful way.
Yeah.
Because you learn so much from that. And, you know, the fact of the matter is those conversations are happening. But if they're happening on our social platforms, I can see them. I can interact with them. I can share them with leadership.
Better
and say,
be able
hey,
to know them. Right?
Yeah, better to know and then to really figure something out. I mean, I know that I call it contain the hate. That's what I call it. Like,
contain the hate.
Because then you know what the conversation is, you know what the trends are, and you can respond to them and be more agile as an organization in terms of your communications. Not everyone's going to love every single thing you do. And that's hard. That's hard for us all to swallow as human beings and as brands, too.
I think many school leaders in higher ed and K-12 have come to that hard lesson, you know, many times over. Although many things they do are well loved and respected, but
sure, there's
a level of crisis always stirring in the senior offices, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, but sometimes it's good to get a little bit of that feedback and see maybe there's a trend in something that you didn't even know about, and then here you can address it. And to your point earlier, like, there's so much fun, positive stuff to do on social media. There's so many interesting ways to engage students around what they're learning and how that can be shared in a social realm. There's so much in terms of, you know, I've seen teachers who have Pinterest boards with all kinds of different lesson ideas and learning ideas. So it's a great way to actually share tools and information.
With other teachers as well as with their students.
Yeah, which I think is really great because, you know, for teachers and for students, like, they're using these tools. How about engaging them and using it in an interesting way that interacts with what they might be learning in the classroom? Why not? You know, if, and it's amazing the things that kids can do. I mean, they're so adept at using these tools. So if they're great at, you know, doing an Instagram video or this on YouTube or that, like, that's going to engage them, I would imagine. And it's going to help them see that there are other ways to use these tools beyond what, and that's a whole other issue, getting into the teenage mind and the younger mind and social media. That's a different topic. But I would imagine it would be an interesting tool to engage students around. And to, you know, as a school, you might be thinking only in terms of your, you know, your staff and your faculty. But how about having students play a role in some of this as well?
Well, again, I think about what you've said, whether it's, you know, today's school lunch is this, or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a math teacher and I'm sharing my ideas for lesson plans with, you know, 40,000 other math teachers on social media, that there are many different goals and it becomes a tool that is customized to each goal. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, you know, I have to be on social media sounds, as I've listened to you, to be a very kind of a blank statement, as mm-hmm. opposed to I have to achieve these specific communication mm-hmm. goals or needs or mm-hmm. lessons or educational processes, and here's one tool I can use.
Exactly. I like the way you put that. Because it's like, here's my overall idea of what I want to do. This is what's high value to me. This is important to me and our organization. And oh, by the way, this is a tool. Let's see how we could use it. And in some cases, social media might not be the right tool. And that's a good conversation to have, too. You might find out that, hey, you know, face-to-face conversation,
better
email.
In certain circumstances.
Yeah, but, you know, and that's good, too. Because I think, again, it's really easy to jump to a tactic versus thinking about that big picture goal that you have, and then, okay, here are all the different ways we could do this, and here are some ways we don't want to do it.
So, you know, thousands of school leaders in K-12 and higher ed are going to be listening mm-hmm. to this or watching this podcast or this conversation. Anything that you want to say to them that you haven't, as they try and understand it? Different levels of sophistication. Some have no experience with social media. Some have very robust social media mm-hmm. programs or communication plans that use social media. Mm-hmm. Anything you want them to think about or know that I haven't asked you or that comes to mind for you?
So many things. I guess I would say that when it comes to social media, there are some great things you can do. There are certainly pros and cons to using it, and I think that can be hard and challenging, especially when you're dealing with young people. That's not something to be taken lightly. I know at the medical center we serve pediatric patients as well, and it's always a big conversation and can be a tough conversation when we figure out how do we use these tools in a way that's respectful and supportive of younger people. But I would say there's so much potential to do some amazing, innovative, fun, cool things with social media, and to create community in places where it might not have existed before.
Don't be afraid to use it. Don't be afraid of it.
Yeah, don't fear it. Kind of figure out what, like, your locus of comfort is, right? Enough. Don't feel like you have to do everything. Start in a channel that you feel comfortable in. Start with a goal you feel comfortable and positive about.
By channel, you mean a specific platform
yeah.
Whether it's Reddit or Facebook or
exactly,
whatever. So
yeah.
Don't overwhelm yourself.
No, don't overwhelm yourself. Choose something that feels good, that feels right, that serves your goals, and have fun with it. Like, and the other thing is, let it breathe. Like, let it be organic. A lot of times with social media, there are business goals that, of course, you can, you know, hit on. But the best part about social media is the ability to create relationships ongoing and see where those go, see how they change, see how a community's needs changes, see how People want to interact with information differently, ask questions. You know, this is a conversation medium. So don't just see it as a way to put out information into the world. See it as a way to ask questions. And in the same way, if you go to a social outing in real life, you know, you don't just show up and start talking to somebody about everything about yourself and not ask them any question whatsoever. You engage in conversation with people. And that's the real potential of this tool, is to engage in conversation across different communities, among different people. You know, there's a scholar at University of Chicago, Cass Sunstein, and he wrote a book called Republic 2.0, and it's all about social media and the good and bad. And one thing that he points out is that sometimes social media can become an echo chamber, because you might follow only the people that resonate with you and what you think. And I think a challenge for us to think about, and for educators specifically to think about, as they're trying to, you know, expand perspectives, is to breach that divide and to ask those questions and to engage in conversation with people across the divide to talk about big issues facing us. So I would say use it in that capacity to try to open doors and open minds.
I like that idea of engagement, right? It's critical to education, the idea that we have to be a part of a conversation for learning to take place and to support our students and our teachers and our staff. And so I like the way you talk about social media as being an important tool for engagement, and where that goes.
Well, I always talk about, people talk about ROI. What's the ROI of this? What's the ROI of this, you know, social media thing? And I always say return on engagement. And that can't necessarily always be quantified, but it can be qualified in certain ways. If you're able to change somebody's perspective, if you're able to connect people in a certain way, if you're able to share a viewpoint that maybe has not been heard.
And you have to believe it's working and it's happening. You might not actually get the numbers that show that. Oh, you might, but you might
not. You might, but you might not. And it's also a long-term investment in some cases, because it can be hard to change perspectives, but is it worth it? Yeah, right? At the end of the day, if you can expand somebody's mind in certain ways, or expose them to something they may have not been exposed to before, that's another neat part of social media. You know, you can find out what somebody halfway around the world is thinking or doing about something. And how interesting is that? You know, in the past, you may have not had that potential. Or only certain people may have had that opportunity, depending on who they were and where they came from.
As a superintendent or a university leader, you know, to be able to broadcast a message to the 85 neighbors that border the school property, and that's who you needed to get the message out to as well.
Yeah, that's actually a great tool. Like, I don't know... I don't know if you guys use Facebook Live, but that's a really fun tool to use to actually just live broadcast from where you are to talk about. And the neat thing about that is, again, live broadcast, you can take questions in, people can participate. It just makes it, another part of this is participation. And sometimes it can be hard for people, you know, we all have busy lives, right? And it can be hard for people to know everything and participate in everything that might be happening around a school. So bring that opportunity to people instead of saying, hey, you have to come to this assembly.
We'll come to you through your interface, your computer, and your own home. Which is great.
I know for us, again, at the medical center, like, we're serving a very rural population, and
which most schools in the U.S. are. Mm-hmm. I mean, the majority of the United States is rural.
Yeah.
And so most schools are in rural communities, with the higher ed and K-12.
Yeah, access can be a huge issue. So I might not be willing to drive like an hour or two to, you know, go to a health class at the medical center. But I might be willing to, from my phone or from my desktop computer, watch a Facebook Live or watch a YouTube Live and be able to. So again, it's about access to information, which I think is really powerful and something that, you know, we might not always think about. But how is our audience informed, and how can we help them be more informed?
You know, one of the things we talked about was this idea of, you know, all the good that social media does. And then also some of the challenges it may present. You talked about containing the hate, which I thought was a very interesting way to phrase that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, superintendents and university administrators need to hear the conversation.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about what that means. It kind of aligns with some of what we do, but it's just curious.
I think in my world, and I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say from your world, is that, you know, in my world, it's really important to hear a dissenting opinion. Right? Because that's to me, a good part about social media, is that we're able to hear so many different opinions. On the other end of it, it's, you know, sometimes more negative than that. It could be a poor experience. It could be a poor interaction with an employee at the organization. So there are all these different ways that negativity can manifest itself. It could be a misunderstanding about the organization and what it does. It could be to customers or clients or audience members who are disagreeing on things. There's so many different ways negativity can manifest itself. But it's important for us to kind of see in each of those different categories, what are people saying? And then is there an opportunity to address that negativity in some way? Is there an opportunity to connect the person with somebody at the organization? Sometimes what I've most recently done at the medical center is we had a few people who, you know, didn't have a very positive opinion. And what we did was we asked some questions about that. And actually one person we invited in to meet with our chief medical officer.
Wow.
And to answer some of the big questions that this person had. And did we change the person's mind? I think a little bit. I think they still had some questions, but the fact of the matter is that it was a respect thing. You know, somebody asks you a question or they have a different opinion. It's kind of a respectful way to interact with somebody. I think social media can be challenging sometimes because the negativity can build to a point where nothing positive might come out of it or ends up being belittling. Our approach is always to respect the person in the conversation and their point of view and to kind of figure out who they are. And I think more so in the health world, there are issues around misinformation. People feel different ways around certain medical procedures and techniques, etc. But curious what you see in your world.
Yeah, so, you know, when the conversation is difficult or contain the hate or mm-hmm. whatever, in the healthiest ways, it's a part of a positive experience. Mm-hmm. And what we recognized was for you know, maybe as long as people have been people, mm-hmm. The thought of doing something bad or the intention to do something mm-hmm. bad in terms of harm against another person, mass violence, targeted violence, harm against oneself,
yeah.
is often been shared in discreet or not so discreet ways, you know, historically. You go back, you know, decades and decades and decades, and when someone's done something bad, they've often talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
They've told their best friend, they've journaled it, they've written a manifesto, mm-hmm. all of that
yeah.
as such.
Yeah.
About 20 years ago, Dr. Marilyn O'Toole, who at the time was an FBI researcher and an FBI agent, wrote about school violence, this concept of leakage,
mm-hmm.
this idea that before someone, you know, before a violent actor acted on what they were going to do, they leaked it in some way, and they communicated it to a friend or a mm-hmm. teacher, or you know, it. You know, we saw in the tragedy with you know at Virginia Tech with Sung Wee, you know, Cho and the shootings, the what was written in his English papers, and mm-hmm. all of this is fairly ubiquitous, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're Ted Kaczynski and the manifesto for the Unabomber, mm-hmm. or you're, you know, thinking of taking your own life and you've
mm-hmm.
now journaled about it.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge, though, has been as the conversation moved online
mm-hmm.
and we ended up in a digital space, social media,
mm-hmm.
that leakage moved onto social media.
Mm-hmm.
And before we came along, it was near impossible with any kind of consistency to pay attention to that digital conversation in a way that's respectful, but looking for those signals of harm.
Yeah.
So we've, you know, we work with universities and colleges and school districts across the country, and we identify, in essence, leakage. And it's not just about potential violent acts. It's
mm-hmm.
outcries for help.
Yeah.
You know, it's people who are crying out for help and attention. And we want to be able to connect them, because something, again, you said earlier was that it's about relationships and engagement,
mm-hmm.
right, and knowing. And we believe that, you know, schools are the safest they can be when every student has a responsible adult
mm-hmm.
who cares about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so for our ability to identify that potential leak or that leakage and share it in a timely manner so that the school, the university, the college, the K-12
mm-hmm.
school can reach out to that person and say, hey, look, we saw this, we're aware of this, are you okay? Can we talk? How can we help you? In some instances, it ends up in potentially criminal activity,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending
mm-hmm.
on what they posted.
Mm-hmm.
In many instances, it's, I want to help you, and you know, you're
mm-hmm.
you seem to want some help, so can we talk? And that's where we built, you know, our understanding of the need. So kind of taking your perspective of people are unhappy, they're dissatisfied, customer service,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth, and then there might be a point in time where that kind of you know, transitions over to acts of potential violence
mm-hmm.
or such. We want to be able to help with that. And again, it's because to your point earlier, the conversation in society has gone digital. Mm-hmm. We're all online.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be that as a, you know, when my kids, when I was in school, you know, when I was in grade school, we had a teacher that, you know, went out with us at lunch, at recess, mm-hmm. you know, and we didn't initially interact with him or her. They typically stood and watched, and maybe there were two teachers chatting, mm-hmm. and, but they were there to pay attention to us.
Yeah.
They weren't listening to the conversations we were having on the swing set.
Yeah.
That conversation doesn't stop now when the school bell rings. It's moved online, it's 24/7, it's seven mm-hmm. days a week, and it's difficult to be a part of that conversation as a school, as a superintendent of a school, for example, when your school population is generating 4 million social media posts
sure.
a week.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we see ourselves as an important part of their ability to listen. Kind of goes back to what you were
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point when, you know, I was talking earlier, I was talking kind of about the contain the hate in terms of, you know,
public relations crisis.
Yeah, but you bring up a really interesting point around scanning for, you know, cries for help. And I think, you know, I've seen that a little bit in our world in terms of, you know, the mental health crisis
sure.
and the different mental health issues that are facing people and, you know, the importance of watching for those conversations to see when and if we need to intervene and to help people.
And I like that word intervention. I you know, I had a whole career in law enforcement, and mm-hmm. it's easy to think, you know, punitive. You arrest
yeah, yeah.
somebody, you get them in trouble, mm-hmm. you know, or they get themselves in trouble and you bring them to. But in this case, whether it's somebody who is, you know, targeting violence against another person
mm-hmm.
or a school,
mm-hmm.
or somebody who is feeling depressed and anxious and they're having their own internal
mm-hmm.
We see both of those as somebody crying out for help.
Yeah.
You know, the initial interaction might be a little different, or the follow-up might be a little different, but at the end of the day, someone who's thinking about targeted violence
mm-hmm.
needs help, much the way somebody talking about harming themselves
yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
such needs help. And
yeah.
so we think that listening to that conversation in a very respectful way,
mm-hmm.
not following, not
mm-hmm.
monitoring, not
mm-hmm.
surveilling, but really just listening to those signals
mm-hmm,
of harm
mm-hmm.
is the way to have gone. And, you know, of course, we're proud to have helped thousands of schools across the country avert
yeah.
tragedies.
No, that's really neat. That's like the true, to me, that's the true positive potential of social media, is to figure out how can we use it to help people in real life. That's something that I think about a lot in my work, is how can what we do on social media in terms of the experience, how can that actually help somebody in their real, actual life?
You know, I have friends all over the world that I've never met. People that I interact with on social media because we have similar interests, right? I like to ride motorcycles. I you know, I like to do certain things, and I've got a community around that I can tap into and kind of what that looks like. And I'm talking to people in Australia and people
mm-hmm.
in Great Britain, and that's fun and exciting. We're interested in what we pay closest attention to. Is not all of that. It's
mm-hmm.
not, you know, the 35,000th picture of a kitty cat, you know, posted in the first 20,
really?
You know, 20 minutes.
Oh.
I love cat. I love animals. So it's not like I don't love animals. I do. I'm not, just not looking at. What we're looking for is that, you know, that signal. Having studied how people talk, which is something else you said. You know, how people write letters, how they email, how they text, how they each. Whatever you could have the same message, but how it's conveyed in each of those mediums is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had to spend a lot of time understanding that language of how we talk about things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and
I mean,
sometimes it's very subtle. I know there was some research that came out recently at the University of Vermont that looked at Instagram and how people facing a mental health issue or who are depressed, like there's a certain filter,
sure.
there's a certain
the
tonality.
The Applied Mathematics group did some
yeah,
really interesting work with that.
It's very interesting because some of the stuff is super subtle, and it's not, you know, you say signal, I think that's a really good phrase or term for it, because you don't necessarily, it can be very, it's not just like a word that would be very obvious to you or a photo that would be very obvious to you. It can be very simple choices that the person might not even be conscious of. But as you're watching and listening, you can pick up on these things, and they might grow over time. They might not. It might be a low level, but still.
And the challenge we run into in many cases, we you know, our technology is sophisticated, so we
mm-hmm.
but still, the philosophical perspective is, well, what if we serve up information to a school superintendent, let's say, of something that they then act on and it gets someone in trouble who shouldn't have? Like, you know, that signal is misinterpreted or isn't. And so we've been very aware of that part of the conversation. I mean, I do national media interviews regularly, and I get asked in every one of them about privacy and just how what we do and how important to us your privacy is. And and so trying to provide a value, save a life, provide information which can get someone help, walking the line between doing it for all the right reasons and not serving up so much information that, you know, it creates perspectives that may not be accurate. And of course then relying on the schools to be smart enough to understand, you know, if you're a school principal or a university vice president or such, you know, the assumption is you've been in the business long enough to be able to make good decisions with whatever information is coming at you, not necessarily making assumptions about and so those conversations are important because, you know, as I learned yesterday in one discussion I had, someone had said, well, this interviewer had said, well, talk about the privacy, and we talked about we're not a surveillance tool, we don't do any of that. And I made an interesting point, which I don't think I'd made prior to that, which is your cell phone, your smart thermostat, your Amazon Alexa device, or whatever you have, knows more about you than we ever will, because we don't gather information. So we're trying to do what we're doing, and there's a lot of, well, let's make sure you're not looking over our shoulders. At the same time, I think this morning on the way in, there was there were 14 billion IoT devices and Internet of Things devices in use right now in the world, and it's going to double or triple in the next 12 or 18 months or something to that effect, you know, 28, 30 billion. The amount of data that companies know about us is significant. And so it's interesting to then walk that line of, we're here to help you help save a life, and there's a privacy concern, but you're more at risk of having your privacy be breached with the phone in your pocket than you are with what we're doing. And yet, these are important conversations. Like, you know, we have to have them because of the ubiquitousness of social media.
Well, and that's, I think, you bring up a good point. Like, I think one of the biggest questions of today's society is big data and how it's used. And there's so many great ways to use it. Like you just said, saving a life, helping somebody, helping people make a decision or do something. And then there are all these, of course, nefarious
and the largest
ways
social
that
media
data
companies,
can be used. So
they're worth, the larger social media are worth billions of dollars because they're monetizing marketing-related data, which I don't...
And it's information.
It is. It's information on all of us. What
and
we look at, websites,
exactly.
Everything.
Well, there was a, recently there was a trend on Facebook where it was like you 10 years ago versus you today, and people, you know, post a photo of themselves 10 years ago and a photo of themselves today. And one you know, media critic pointed out that is this Facebook trying to develop some kind of artificial intelligence or some kind of tool to understand
how people change
and what they look like, and because there's all this
good question.
There's an interesting article in the New Yorker recently around visual technology and how videos and photos can be created that make it seem like a person is saying something or doing
all these interesting ways
that, you know, the technology is advancing so much and the data that we have at our fingertips is growing and growing and ever expanding every day, and how are we then using that? You know, it's such a huge question that I don't have all the answers to, but
I think it's an important conversation. I mean, I spent the majority of my career having taken an oath to the Constitution and to protecting the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment, and specifically even as a university, you know, police chief, the importance of creating an environment that was, you know, free for speech and assembly. And we built the right tool to protect that, and I think the conversation needs to be had regularly. There needs to constantly be, in our digital age, a conversation about what are you willing to have be known about you. You know, whether it's anonymized or otherwise, we live in a time where a lot of people know a lot about us, and so it's interesting, and it's probably a little frightening at the same time.
It's an incredible potential, and also there's this flip side.
And a whole generation of people being raised and grown and interacting with the world who don't know any different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't grow up, cell phones weren't around when I was, in grade school and in high school. We didn't have cell phones. 95% of school age young adults and children, have phones, or it's, I think Pew came out with a stat right around that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they don't know any different. I remember having a conversation with students at the university around, we were putting new cameras in, and at the time, cameras were a lot dumber than they are now. Mm-hmm. Now, security cameras have video image recognition and movement trackers and all this other stuff. And, one of the students pulled out a cell phone and said, whether there's a camera on that wall or not, I got one in my pocket all the time, so I don't care.
Yeah.
It was a change from earlier conversations around, you're going to put cameras up, you're going to be watching us all the time. And now, if I go to a school as a school security expert and there aren't cameras, I'm asking them, how could you not have cameras? I mean, they're so ubiquitous and inexpensive and useful. How do you not have a camera, right? So sounds like social media, we're in the same boat with that. If you're a school, a university, a business, you have to have some kind of a presence. You just need the strategy to have it.
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting point you bring up about having the camera in the palm of your hand, because that's another thing to think about too. There used to be this world of internal communications and external communications, right? And now everything internal is external to a certain point, because anybody working anywhere can take video of a meeting, can take video of something happening, and post it online. I remember at the beginning of my career, when camera phones were becoming more ubiquitous, that was a big issue. Like, you can't bring your phone into a private, confidential meeting. Because if you take video of something and then post it online, there could be serious ramifications for that. So it's interesting you say, as much as there's surveillance around us to watch us, we also have cameras in our hands that can expose tons of information, truths, and other things. So,
in conversations with our young adults and young people saying, if you record it and you post it, it's there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere it exists. And that's a whole other conversation of, what are you doing with the information you're generating? And so there's a lot, I think, for school, administrators and leaders to mm-hmm. think about in terms of the impact of, I met a superintendent not too long ago who, she was an English teacher in the beginning of her career, and now 30 or 40 years later, here mm-hmm. she is as a superintendent, and mm-hmm. she said it was so much easier when, superintendents just had to worry about lesson plans mm-hmm. and making sure that the school teaching and that lunch was served and everyone was doing what they needed to do. Now they're having to deal with digital citizenship mm-hmm. and engagement mm-hmm. and privacy and technology and, it's just one thing after another.
I would imagine it's been kind of an interesting transformation for somebody who's been in that world to transcend into this time.
Well, even in the business world you've been in and the organization worked with, I mean, you pioneered this idea of being involved in social media and its use in organizations mm-hmm. because, prior to you being in college, it didn't even exist.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I first got introduced to the Facebook. From someone I worked with at the university, and I was like, "What's the Facebook?" And they were like, "Well, this is what and what goes on the Facebook, and why would I ever want mm-hmm. the Facebook, and mm-hmm. what's a blog, and what is that thing?" And I mean, I remember those conversations because I was just so out of my element trying to figure out what I was looking at.
Yeah, but one thing I think hasn't changed, and that's strategy and understanding human behavior. And I think you talked about that a little bit earlier, but really understanding what kinds of things as humans are we driven to do, and how does social media converge with that? When we think about immediacy or impulsivity or, how teenagers behave versus how, adults behave, and really looking at those core human behaviors and even what's happening in your brain, your brain on social media, there's been more work done on that. And then looking at how that converges with social media and trying to figure out what problems arise from that and how can we step in and help or aid or support, whatever it happens to be. It's very interesting because in many ways humans haven't changed that much in over the course of history, but our environment has changed so much.
And how do our
and how do our behaviors interact with that? And what are the issues that come out of that? And how do we how do we help solve those? So I think that's a really interesting part of social media and digital media too, is seeing what that convergence looks like.
You know, I had a conversation recently with Dr. Blaise Aguirre, who's a Harvard psychiatrist mm-hmm. at McLean Hospital in outside of Boston. Mm-hmm. He's an expert in adolescent psychiatry and mm-hmm. mental health and such. And he mm-hmm. he made a presentation that I heard that I just can't get out of my mind when I think about this stuff. And that is, he talks about never in history have our youth been more connected mm-hmm. and yet felt more alone mm-hmm. than right now. Mm-hmm. And primarily he points to the pervasiveness of this thing called social media yeah. and how it's being used and how it's impacting relationships and perceptions mm-hmm. and such. And I think it there's a lot of good social mm-hmm. media does. I can look at my favorite picture of my kitty cat, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever I want to look at that I'm happy about. But then there's a dark side that yeah. we have to be aware of, and I think helping our youth navigate that mm-hmm. and understand how to support them is going to be critical.
I agree. You know, teens and younger people have such a different mindset at that age. Like, they're forming their identity, the peer relationships that are yeah. so important, and they have this tool that can be wonderful and positive.
It's 24/7.
And it's 24/7, but there are all these, frankly, awful things that can happen as well.
I mean, I got, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old. I was, you know, as tall as I am now and much of a beanpole, mm-hmm. and I got bullied relentlessly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember I could get off the bus and I'd go home and I was safe. There was mm-hmm. nobody following me. I went into my home. I was my...
Yeah.
The challenge we have today is that communication doesn't stop mm-hmm. when I get off, you know, when my kids get off the school bus. It's constant. It's in fact, it kind of goes back to what I said earlier, which is I often joke with my kids as an example that they don't even know we have a house phone. I mean, I think they do. I think they know how to use it. I don't think I've ever seen them use it. And certainly when it rings, they don't answer it, which mm-hmm. is because everything is on their phones
yeah.
and they're in their hands. So I think there's an opportunity to build resiliency around you know, some healthy habits around social media with youth, and
yeah.
to help develop community that isn't so dependent on a device and a social media account. But all important parts of the conversation for a healthy school environment and a healthy digital life.
Agree.
And just so grateful, Alex, that you made the time to be with us today. I think the work you're doing is critically important. I think you have a great and unique perspective given, you know, you're pioneering in this space and watching it evolve, and I'm just really glad that we had an opportunity to connect today.
Same. Thanks for the conversation.
Well,
really enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Social Sessions. Subscribe to our channel today and stay tuned for more.